Man kann sein Glück aussehen, es hegen und pflegen, langsam wachsen sehen, darauf warten.
Oder man reißt es einfach auf.
Die Lose zum Aufreißen von Lotto Bayern. Das Bayernlos, das Bayernglück, das Extragehalt oder das Megagehalt. Reiß dein Glück auf. Nur in deiner Lottoannahmestelle. Lotto Bayern. Nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Infos unter bjork.de.
My name is Carter. I take pride in my work. And I work on the pipes. My current job revolves around an oil pipeline in the Persian Gulf. It's at the very bottom of the sea, between Saudi Arabia and Iran. It's just gone midday. But unfortunately, we are too far down for the light at the surface to reach us. So, my current surroundings are illuminated by nothing more than the yellowish beam of my flashlight. A small collection of bubbles escape from my diving mask. They ripple up and out of sight as I gently kick my flippers, slowly propelling myself through the gloom. As a worker down here, I am one of three, but the others are not currently visible to me. My beam lands on a great metal pipe, the one that extends up into the habitat, a cage-like artificial pocket of air, and down, down to the depths below. I look down and cast my beam over the pipe's body. The light catches on nothing but the rusted metal, a lone cylindrical obelisk in the watery world around me. I lower the beam. I cast it as far down as it will go, but all I see are my flippers beneath me, gently kicking, and the great pipe vanishing into the blue-black darkness beneath my feet. A chill passes through my body. I hear the sound of my heartbeat in my ears. Where this vertical pipe connects to its horizontal brother on the ocean floor, there is an enormous metal structure of sorts, one with the purpose of keeping a series of temporary installments attached to the pipe in place. I cannot see this monstrosity at present, but the simple act of knowing that far below lurks a monstrous metal skeleton waiting patiently beneath my feet. I shiver. They tell tales about this place, you know, about the sea. Tales of malevolent spirits that play tricks on divers. Water jinn, they're called. These spirits show divers illusions and distortions to confuse them. They get them deliberately lost as a form of amusement, the tales say. And then, depending on the spirit's moods, they either get bored and let them go, or they devour them. Something glitters in the gloom in the corner of my eye, and I wheel around in the water, raising the beam of the flashlight, a gasp escaping into my mask. But the beam lands on nothing more than a school of tiny silver fish. They flitter by and pay me no mind, and I catch my breath. Idiot Kadar, I mutter to myself, my voice obscured by the mask, and I kick my way up through the water, following the pipe towards the habitat's air pocket. I see the waterline rippling above me. It draws closer and closer, and I catch sight of flashes of color beyond. My comrades. Eventually, I break through the surface, popping off my mouthpiece and raising my mask, shaking my hair as I clamber up onto the little platform that surrounds us. A bench-like apparatus that goes all the way around the inside rim of the habitat. As I said before, I am one of three. My colleagues are called Amir and Ahmed, and they sit waiting for me, their legs dangling over the side, their flippers dipped in the water beneath. I let out a grunt and a sigh as I take a seat beside them, my own flippers half submerged in the water beneath. It seems almost paradoxical, this little space, a marvel of physics. We sit far below the surface of the sea, in the small confines that the habitat provides, and yet, we have air. The habitat is a metal box about 4 meters in width and 3 in height. The air in here is dank and stale, but it is, at the least, quite breathable. From the center of the water between us, the pipe extends up and into the stagnant air. The pipe is currently corked by an enormous rubber plug, one that we will need to deflate before our shift is over. Its purpose is to prevent the oil inside the pipe leaking out into the sea. Thanks to the habitat, we can safely remove it now, without risk of environmental damage. The pipe in question goes all the way down to the bottom of the sea in a straight line, and there it splits in two and travels horizontally across the seafloor. One end travels north, a few miles out of the Saudi Arabian coast, and the other travels south. It's just about wide enough for a man to squeeze down, should an emergency repair need taking place from the inside, but the diameter is not large. I wipe some of the salt water from my face as Amir connects a long, black cable to the depressurizer. The end of the cable leads down into the pipe and is connected to the rubber plug. "See any spirits down there today, Kedar?" Amir asks me as he fastens the seal on the cable. "The Jinn al-Baha?" Akhmed chuckles, scratching his beard. His voice, as does Amir's, echoes around the somewhat claustrophobic confines of the habitat. I smile dryly. "No spirits, Amir. Just..." I think about the pipe, disappearing down into the darkness far below. I can't quite explain why it gives me the creeps. It just does. "Just what?" Amir asks. "Nothing," I finish. "What about you guys? Any spirits?" I turn to Ahmad. "Have you finally caught sight of Jinn al-Baha?" I wave my hands and fingers mysteriously, teasing him. But Ahmad is undaunted. "You mock, Kedar. But this sea, this ancient sea, if we're going to see one, then it'll be here." He claps his hands together, and a small shower of water droplets splash down onto the water by our feet. The shimmering blue gateway to the sea below, the sea above, and the ocean all around. "And I'll tell you what else," he continues, raising a finger. "I did see something." "Oh, here we go," Amir mutters, rolling his eyes. "No, no, listen," Ahmed says hurriedly. "Just listen to this. So there I was, right, about an hour ago, swimming around near the pipe, when I may have gotten a little distracted by a fish." Amir shakes his head, and we exchange a glance. "You should have seen it, Amir. A great golden thing. I wanted a better look, so I left the pipe and followed it, just for a short while. And eventually he got spooked and vanished into the blue." Ahmed falters. He rubs his chin. "It was actually quite an alarming experience. I turned back to the pipe and, of course, I saw nothing but the endless void of the ocean. I tried to retrace my steps, but again, there were no steps. I was alone. It was frightening." Amir and myself remain silent. "But then, that's when I saw it. I saw them," Ahmed continues, practically jumping on the metal ledge we're all perched on. "Hey, easy," I say, as I feel myself rattle in time to his jumps. Amir flicks a switch on the depressurization machine. It starts to rumble. Ahmed leans forward, looking between us. "Out there, in the far distance, I see a trio of shapes, three figures like shadows in the deep in the gloom." "You should take up poetry," Amir mutters as he flicks another switch. Against my sense of better judgment, I am too engrossed by Ahmed's story to pay attention to exactly what it is he is doing. "What kind of shapes?" I ask. "What kind of figures?" "They were like smoke, except no, more like mist maybe. Thick, dense mist, with eyes that flickered pale like refracting sunlight. You had to look a certain way to see them." Ahmed's voice drops low, becomes wistful. "I saw them for only a second or two, And then they were gone. Vanished. How'd you get back to the pipe? I ask. Did the spirit show you the way? Amir chuckles. Well, no. I just used the compass, Ahmed says. But that's beside the point. I saw something. I know I did. I thought the spirits were supposed to be dangerous, Amir says. The stories always tell of how cruel they are. They play pranks on divers like us, you know. They bang on the pipes, they groan and moan from the inside. Makes you think that there are monsters inside, waiting to burst right out and get you. Maybe that's why they appear to me, Ahmed says thoughtfully, then gestures to the pipe between us. Maybe they were trying to warn us. Perhaps there's a monster in the pipe. Amir snorts. Don't be ridiculous. Maybe once the plug is deflated, Ahmed says softly, maybe the beast will spring right out. And where would we go? We are effectively trapped down here, when you really think about it. There is a moment of uncomfortable silence, broken only by a slow hissing produced by the depressurization machine as it begins its work deflating the plug in the pipe. Nonsense, Amir says after a beat, shaking his head. Don't say such stupid stuff. All I'm saying, Ahmed finishes, shrugging, is that the spirits aren't necessarily something to be feared. I know you guys don't really believe, but they can be helpful too. They don't devour people. The Jinn al-Biha, mischievous maybe, but not unkind in their own way. Amir grunts and waves his hand dismissively. Ahmed looks at me for support, and I just laugh. Come on, I say. Enough is enough, I think. We have work to do. I wouldn't want Zahir to snitch on us again. The conversation shifts, and a collective groan echoes around the habitat. I can't stand that guy, Amir says dramatically, and we all laugh. A collective dislike of the man has become a running joke between us. Zahir is technically a colleague of ours, and although we rarely work in close capacity, his projects always seem to be in tandem to our own, so we're never quite rid of him. He has thick red hair and a ridiculous scraggly beard, and all in all, he makes himself an easy target. A busybody and a teacher's pet, you see. He clocks in more hours than he has to, unpaid I might add, yet despite his enduring and tragic efforts, he always gets passed up for promotion because he has a vacuum for a personality. Zahir is entirely devoid of charisma. Maybe we should play a prank on him before we go up, Amir suggests, as the machine deflating the plug kicks up a gear. The hissing grows louder. What kind of prank? Ahmed asks. I don't know. We could head over to his site in Azraqwan, bang some pipes, make some noise, give him a little spook before his shift is over. Could be fun. Wouldn't be worth it, I reply. As much fun as that sounds, Azraqwan is a kilometer and a half away. Do you really want to swim all that way for some childish prank? And besides, we never fool Zahir with that spirit nonsense. The man doesn't believe in anything. He's got no imagination. True, Amir nods regretfully. He fiddles with a machine beside him and gives it a light slap. And it does its job. It finishes deflating the plug to a sufficient degree, freeing up a space around it and opening a way down into the pipe. What this was supposed to do was allow us to reach in, haul the deflated plug out, check for leaks, damage, and whether the plug needs a potential replacement. We should have been able to do this easily and safely, as the pipe, at this time and on this day, is supposed to be filled with oil. For whatever reason, however, the pipe is not. There is, as it turns out, significantly less oil inside than we were told, and as was believed. And so, what happens instead takes place over the course of a few terrible seconds, a true nightmare that I will never, ever be able to forget. The positive pressure inside the habitat, the little atmosphere keeping us alive, rushes instantaneously into the pipe and forces down the small amount of oil at a monstrous, inhuman speed. This motion creates what I can only describe as a blinding vortex. The air and the ocean are hauled up and around us like a sudden whirlwind of chaos and terror in the blink of an eye. My vision is lost to a brutal and immediate rush of darkness as my body is slammed into the habitat wall. I scream, but all that I could produce is froth and bubbles as my shoulder cracks on the edge of something metal. I do not know which way is up or down. The safety and sanctuary of the habitat is shattered. I can see nothing but shadow as water blasts into my nose and my mouth and eyes, and I am sucked instantly and brutally down into the pipe. I can feel its walls pressing against me on all sides as I am dragged cataclysmically between them. I am forced through the water and the oil head first at near breakneck speed. Blood rushes to my head as my arms and legs are smashed and battered against the metal. There is only terror, terror, and darkness. My head strikes against the metal as the pipe levels out, and the world behind my screwed shut eyelids flashes red, then white. A ringing echoes in my ears and competes with the thunderous rush of the water as I release an involuntary bellow of pain. Oil and seawater pour into my mouth, my lungs, and I swallow some and breathe in the rest, choking and drowning as I am dragged through the pipe along the seafloor. I'm going to die. This one singular thought plays over and over in my head. I'm going to die, and this is the end. The terror of my situation, for a quick, fleeting moment, is replaced by an eerie calm. The sounds of the rushing, hammering water do not lessen, but I find my altitude changed. It soothes me, and I think about a beach I visited as a young child with my family as I prepare to exhale my final breath. Except, instead of producing bubbles as I do so, I instead begin to choke and to splutter. I start to cough, spluttering, coughing. And I realize at once that this can only mean one thing. I have found air. I gasp and retch. I try to bring my hands up to my mouth, but they bang painfully against the inner wall of the pipe. My right wrist throbs angrily, sending shards of pain shooting up my arm. I think the entire hand may be broken. Air, I think to myself, and the vision of the beach is lost. The terror floods immediately back into my mind, in the same manner as the water was hauled into the pipe. Most of my head is submerged in water. Though my eyes, nose, and mouth are free, I can lift my head, then my ears are raised above the waterline, and I am able to hear. But the action presses on my forehead against the cold metal above me. I've stopped moving, and the reality of my situation sets in. I'm in the pipe. "Oh no," I murmur aloud, retching as I cough up water and oil. "Oh no, 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 no," I scream. I slam my good fist against the metal, shouting for help. "Please," I scream into the pitch black darkness. "Please, someone, Amir, Ahmed." Panic strikes. There is nowhere to go, nowhere to run, and no one to hear me. I can barely move. The water ebbs and sloshes around my face, and I gasp. My breathing becomes shallow and dangerous. "You're not drowning," I have to keep telling myself. "You're not drowning. You have some air. You can breathe. You can breathe. Calm yourself. Calm yourself, Gadar." I try to raise my legs, and one of my flippers kicks against the roof of the pipe. I try to turn a little to my side, and realize that to do so requires significant effort and a reasonable degree of pain. I've done some serious damage to my shoulder, and my neck too, perhaps. The simple act of raising my head causes immense pain to shoot down my spine, but to allow my head to lower completely would mean the majority of my face is submerged. I force myself to slow my breathing. That's the priority. Nice, slow breathing. In and out. Slow, deep breaths. With grunts of pain and a hammering heart, I shuffle and twist as best I can, searching my person for my scuba equipment. I believe that I am wearing only a single flipper now. I think the other must have been torn off as I was sucked into the pipe. No other equipment can be found. My breathing mask and the air tank, it's all gone. It's gone. Oh God, I whisper, and despite my sense of logic, I bang on the pipe. Hello, I shout into the inky darkness. Hello, is anyone there? Kadar, comes a voice a little ways back along the pipe. It echoes from the darkness beyond my feet. I try to raise my face a little higher, to look down into the void, but it's futile. I can see nothing. Hello? I shout back. Who is it? Ahmed, are you alright? Kadar, he shouts, a relief tempered with terror. You're alive. I can breathe. Are you okay? Another voice echoes from beyond even Ahmed. It is fainter, but I can still hear it. Guys? Guys, comes the voice of Amir. Guys, are you both alright? Thank the Lord, I mutter, holding back a sob of relief. Amir, Ahmed, it's Kadar. Are you hurt? Yes, Amir calls after me. I believe one of my arms is broken. Likewise, Amir shouts. Then, a little quieter. Damn, I think my legs are too. Oh God. He releases what sounds like a cry of pain, then swears. What do we do? Ahmed calls into the pipe. What do we do? He kicks against the pipe, and the sound reverberates down and over my head. Okay, hold on, hold on, I shout, clenching my hands into fists, thinking, using my overheating brain as best as I can. The three of us are alive. We're trapped in the pipe at the bottom of the sea. No one knows we're down here, and once they find the wreckage of the habitat, they'll probably assume we were killed instantly, cast out into the sea perhaps. I feel the panic returning. I try to stretch my limbs, but I'm unable. I kick the pipe in frustration and let out a shout of rage. Kadar, calm down, calls Ahmed. It's all right. We'll be all right. Yes, yes. I need to calm down. First things first. The pipe. When it reaches the sea floor, splits into two. I do not know if we've been pulled north towards the site of Azraq 1 or south towards the site of Azraq 2. How far away are they? I try to think. Azraq 1 is situated around 1.5 kilometers north of our former location of the habitat. Azraq 2 is over twice that distance south. I have no idea how far along we were pulled down the pipe. It all happened so fast. We could be hundreds of meters in either direction by now. All I know is that the air we're breathing, the pocket created, is likely due to the undulations of the pipe. Small bumps and raises over support beams. It's entirely possible that there are more of these further down the tunnel. But how large is each air pocket? And at what point do they run out? Okay, I shout down. Friends, I have an idea, and we do not have time to waste. I'm all ears, brother, Ahmed calls up. There is a moment of silence. Amir? Ahmed calls down. Yes, he replies weakly. I'm here, but I'm not in good shape. I'm going to be honest. It's okay, I shout, forcing my own confidence to grow, believing in hope for us, for the sake of my friends. if not for myself. We'll be all right. Just listen. I clear my throat, and the sound bounces off the pipe above me and back into my face. I raise my head to clear my ears from the water and wince from the pain. We need to move, I shout simply. We cannot stay here or we will die. Any further pressure changes and the pipe could fill with water to the brim. And regardless, sooner or later, we will use up all of the oxygen and we will suffocate. So I propose this. We do our best to move. We shuffle our way along the pipe as far as we can. If we're in luck, we've been pulled north, and I do not know how much distance we've already covered. Azrak 1 is only 1.5 kilometers away max. That's a distance we can make, I'm sure of it. And if we've been pulled south, Amir calls. To this, I remain silent. The sound of something low and deep reverberates along the pipe. Then, shakily, Ahmed replies, "All right, Kadar, I'm with you. We'll do this." We crawl our way along the pipe, and we pray. "Amir," I call down, "what do you think?" He coughs and groans. "Kadar," he says, "look, I can barely move. I can't do this." "You can," Ahmed shouts down. "You can." "No, Ahmed," Amir groans again. "Ahmed, my injuries are bad. I cannot move an inch. We can't leave you behind," Ahmed splutters, but Amir interrupts. "Go," he says, "and once you've escaped, you'll know where to find me. Just go, all right? You said yourselves, the clock is ticking, so go." I hesitate, then release a long, shuddering sigh. "God save you, brother," I call down. "We'll be back, I promise. We won't leave you." "I know," he says, his voice distant and quiet. "Damn," I mutter angrily, slamming my fist against the pipe. "Ahmed, are you ready?" There's a pause. "Yes," he says. "I'm right behind you, Kadar. Let's do this." And so, we begin our venture. Excruciatingly claustrophobic does not even begin to cover it. The knowledge that beyond these narrow confines is nothing more than the great weight of the ocean does not fill me with bravery. Every inch that we travel requires an exertion. I find little to no leverage on the wet, slippery, and oil-soaked base of the pipe. So, I have to find the slightest, narrowest of grooves, mostly around the upper half, and press my toes or heels into them, using my one good hand and my one broken hand to help force myself along through the sloshing, sinister waters. I can see nothing. There is no level of light at all for my eyes to adjust to. So in pitch darkness, we remain. As we move, I try my best to keep track of the distance traveled. My estimate, I think, is reasonable after 2 or 3 meters. After 10, my grasp is feeble. And beyond that, I simply lose track. It's impossible to tell. We keep shuffling our way down the pipe, listening to the sounds of our breathing, occasionally calling down to each for reassurance, Ahmed and I. Slowly and steadily through this underwater pipe, inch by agonizing inch. It's tough to tell how much time passes, but after around 20 minutes, I make a disturbing discovery. It was gradual at first, so gradual that I did not notice, but there is now a significant stress placed on the back of my neck. I'm having to hold my face as high as I can, and my forehead has been pressed against the metal for a while now. It is only when I have to alter the shape of my lips to inhale the air that I realize we are running out. I suppress a wave of panic and stop moving at once, shuffling back the way I came to give myself a little more airspace to work with. Water sloshes in my ears and obscures my hearing, but I call down to Ahmed. Ahmed, I call. Can you hear me? Yes, he shouts back, coughing. Everything all right? Ahmed, I falter. Ahmed, we're about to run out of air. There's a pause. What do you mean? He asks, his voice higher, more anxious. I mean, the air pocket is about to expire. Another pause. Maybe there's another further down, he says. I've seen the schematics of the pipe. The undulations are not regular, so there could be another pocket. What if there isn't? I shout back, chest now rising and falling desperately. Damn it, damn it. There is no space, no light. I can't breathe. Get a hold of yourself, Ahmed shouts, and it cuts through the madness. I seize hold of his words and allow them to anchor me. We can do this, brother. I take a deep breath. All right, I say. All right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to move as fast as I can along the pipe. I'll hold my breath and I'll search for an air pocket. Regardless of whether I do or don't, I'll be back to let you know. Okay? You're a brave man, calls the voice of Ahmed. Don't overdo it. Good luck. Okay, I say, heart pounding. I begin to take a series of slow, deep breaths, gently and gradually expanding my lungs, preparing them to hold for as long as they are able. The sound is cold and eerie in the darkness. Steady, deep breaths. My chest rises and falls. I shuffle back along the pipe, my face pressed against the pipe, the air metallic and oily and grim. I can't hear anything now. The water comes all the way up to the sides of my lips. Shaking, I press my hand against the side, doing my best to ignore the pain shooting through my right hand wrist. Here we go, Kadar. I take my final breath in, my lungs fill to their maximum capacity, and I brace myself against the pipe, using my hands and feet to push myself further along. The air is lost, and I am completely submerged beneath the water. It forms a constant, steady, roaring rumble in my ears. I use anything that I can to increase the distance I'm able to move. My elbows, knees, heels, shoulders. I use all of them to search for leverage. Inch by inch, faster than before, I force myself through the pipe. My heart pounds. The beat is loud. So, so loud. My chest trembles, but I keep moving as far as I can. Inch by inch, inch by inch. Don't panic. If I don't find air, then there's really nothing for us. We'll suffocate or drown, or worse, in the belly of the pipe, and we may never be discovered. I have to keep moving, inch by inch. My hands reach a particularly oily section of the pipe, and instead of pressing against the sides, they slip right off. In a blink, my momentum is lost, and I fumble and splutter in terror as I realize that my means of propulsion has now failed me. No, I think with flashes of terrible urgency. No, no. Bubbles unseen escape from my lips as I writhe in the darkness, suffocating in the cold embrace of the rusted beast. Please, I beg, sending up prayers to a god I have neglected, desperately searching for a workable surface. My foot finds a subtle groove, and I'm able to push myself another inch. And from there, I'm able to move another. My journey continues, but I'm rewarded with no relief. Because soon, I will need to breathe in. My lungs have already begun to ache. And if I don't find another pocket of air, then I'll have to return through the pipe, back the way I came, back past the slippery, oily walls. What if I get stuck on my way back? What if I don't make it back in time? How the hell was this allowed to happen? I'm overcome with a sudden burst of rage, and bubbles spill through my clenched teeth as I force myself deeper and deeper through the water, as hastily as I'm able. My lungs start to burn. I'm going to run out of air. Just a little further. I can search a little further. I'm going to run out of air. I'm going to die. Just a little further. I can do it. I can do it. And with a sudden gasp and a great shuddering breath inwards, I almost laugh in desperate thankfulness as the angle of the pipe is suddenly changed and I feel my face emerge into a fresh, new pocket of air. It's not fresh, of course, but in that moment, it's the sweetest air I've ever tasted. I come to a stop and allow some great and rasping breaths, filling and replenishing my lungs. Thank God, is all I can murmur over and over. Thank God, thank God. I calm myself, and once I have my breath, I try shouting. I don't think he'll be able to hear me, but I try anyway. I receive no response, so I try knocking a rhythm on the pipe. There is still no response. So, regretfully, I prepare for the return journey. I'm scared, of course. But I now know it can be done. That there is air waiting safely for me on the other side. So I fill my lungs once again and shuffle back through the pipe, feet first this time, back towards Ahmed's location. I use the material of my diving suit to help me pass by the particularly oily section and emerge back into the former pocket, spluttering and coughing. Oh good lord, Ahmed shouts. Kadar, you took your damn time. I thought you might have... It's alright, I reply. We can make it. There's another pocket ahead. Now listen. And I go on to explain the distance and what he'll need to do. Then finally, for the third, and hopefully final time, we force ourselves through the watery darkness, back beneath and through the pipe, with the promise of the next air pocket, our guiding light. Inch by inch, as fast as I can, praying that Ahmed is able to keep up. And then, as before, my face emerges welcomingly into the new air pocket, but I continue moving along to allow space for Ahmed. The seconds pass, and it's just as I'm beginning to fret that I hear his coughing, the sound of great lungfuls of swallowed air as he breathes in. Yes, I shout, banging my good fist on the pipe. We did it, brother. Yes, he splutters. Yes, we did. Then he releases what sounds like a laugh, and it fills my heart with hope. Come on, I shout to him. Let's keep going. And so we do, on our journey through the pipe, inch by inch, as the hours pass by, the timeless hours in the perpetual, watery darkness. My joints ache, my muscles tense and throb with exertion, but I have to keep going. There's nothing else for it. Our air pocket comes to an end, and as with before, I scout ahead. I have to, of course, as there's simply no way possible for Ahmed to pass me by. After holding my breath for another painful period of time, I am blessed with the discovery of a new breathable space, and so we continue in the same manner. These air pockets, however, grow shorter and shorter as we progress, much to my quiet alarm. But they're still just enough. And so, our journey continues. Every time I have to hold my breath and go on ahead, it is a cruel exercise in willpower and mental strength. But I do my duty. I have to. We have to get out. We need to. An exhausting struggle through the pipe comes to a temporary halt as we reach an air pocket a mere 3 or 4 meters in length. I start with fright as my bad shoulder knocks up against something hard and cold. It moves in little response to the pressure I exert upon it. So, it isn't a blockage of any kind. Could it be? My heart leaps. Wriggling, squirming in the pipe, I do my best to bring my good hand up towards my head. It is not a quick process and requires some uncomfortable maneuvers, but eventually my hand can reach my neck and beyond, and my fingers explore the mysterious object. Despite everything, a grin spreads across my face and I cry out loud with joy. "Ahmed," I shout. "Ahmed, I found a tank. I think... yes, it's all connected. It's all here."
"A tank?" he replies. "What do you mean?"
"I mean an oxygen tank, Ahmed. It's all in one piece. The breathing tube. Yes, it's all here."
"That's fantastic," he exclaims. "How many are there?"
My enthusiasm drops. I shuffle further down the pipe, searching blindly in the darkness for evidence of a potential second set of diving gear. Despite my silent pleas, however, there is only one.
"I can only find one here," I tell my comrade. "But there might be another further down. This is a game changer. We can do this. We can get out." "Whose tank is it, Kadar?" Ahmed asks me. "I think my own was about half full."
"Yes, likewise," I reply. "What about Amir's?"
"Amir's?" Ahmed begins hesitating. "Kadar, I think Amir's was almost empty."
I take a deep breath.
"Right," I reply. "Well, still, this will help. I'll use it now, and I'll see if I can find another set a little further along. Wish me luck."
"Good luck, man," Ahmed says. "Godspeed." I check the tank over as best I can. I hold the mouthpiece around my lips, giving it a few test breaths. Then, on I go. Back beneath the water, though this time armed with the tank to help me along my way. I grunt and shift my body around, shuffling through the pipe, squirming my way along. And I find what will come to be the final air pocket of its type. A mere meter long, not even big enough for Ahmed and I to share at the same time. And, to my growing frustration, there is no sign of a second tank. So, I push deeper, onwards through the pipe, breathing with the tank, pushing it along with me as I go. I discover, to my bitter amusement, what could well be my second missing flipper. But there is still no second tank, and no further air pockets either. Clenching my fist, I realize that I need to go back before Ahmed starts worrying, so I make the painstaking return journey, in a time that to my friend must have felt like hours. But at last, I return to our shared location and inform him of the disappointing news. He is quiet as I relay my findings, and then he says in a soft voice, "Kadar, I think that this is the end of the road for me. There is no use in me going any further. I think that I'll have to wait here." I begin to protest, but my words die in my mouth. What is there for me to say? He's right, of course. It's a harsh truth, but he's absolutely right. He'll simply have to stay behind. The next leg of the journey, I'll have to do alone. A sudden rush of emotion swells up inside me, and I force it back down. There's a time and a place. I try not to consider the fact that this may be the last time I ever hear his voice. Perhaps I've heard both their voices for the very last time. No, time and a place. Keep moving,
Ahmed, I begin, fumbling for some words that'll do the moment justice. But he interrupts.
See you soon, buddy,
he says in the dark. I'm not able to reply immediately. But when I do, I say to him,
yes, for sure. See you soon, buddy. And with that, I'm gone.
I force myself further along the tank, crawling and shuffling, and I am submerged. My breathing is loud through the tube connected to my mouth, and when I reach the final air pocket, I allow myself a second to pause, to steel my constitution. And then this pocket too is left behind. On I go, underwater. The rest of my journey will be underwater, and since I cannot see, there is no way to tell how much air is left in the tank. If it was mine or Ahmed's, then I should have hours to spare. If it was Amir's, well, no point in being coy. If it's Amir's, then I'll likely die down here, unless I'm blessed with another surprise air pocket. It's not impossible, I tell myself, as I crawl through the pipe, water all around me. It's not impossible. And yet, as the hours go by, there are no more air pockets to discover. Just more pipe. The endless, claustrophobic dark of the tunnel. How far have I come? No idea. Impossible to tell, really. And I don't even know which way I'm heading. If it's north, then there's hope. If south, then this whole venture was pointless anyway. I'll never make it back to Azrak 2. Azrak 1, on the other hand. For Azrak 1, hope remains. There's still hope. Onwards through the pipe, through the oily, poisoned water. My elbows burn with pain from the friction. My shoulders have been rubbed raw. My feet are developing painful blisters from the places I've been forced to press them against the pipe for leverage over and over. My neck is killing me. It hurts to turn my head too far in either direction. I just grit my teeth and keep on going. Too late to stop now. Must keep going. On and on and on. God give me strength, I mutter to myself as my muscles contract and sting. Give me strength to see this through. Thinking about Ahmed, about Amir, all alone, just like me, it helps propel me forward. I can't give up, not while they're counting on me. I can never do that to them, not ever. So on I go. Endless, ceaseless dark, endless, ceaseless torture of the pipe. Except, it's not endless, not as luck would have it. The good news regarding my oxygen tank is that it definitely wasn't Amir's. If it was, it would have expired by now. The bad news is that I've been needing deeper and deeper breaths to fill my lungs. And soon, the oxygen that the tank can spare me just won't be enough. It won't go on forever. I have found no other tanks along my journey. It's just the one on my person currently. And then, that's it. Game over. Come on, you pipe, I hiss through the mouthpiece. You can't go on forever. You can't. And of course, it doesn't. My head bashes against hard metal. Eh? I murmur in confusion. I try to continue along my journey, but the way is blocked. I simply cannot go any further. My first thought is one of panic. I fear that I've reached some kind of wall in the pipe, one that shouldn't exist, that I've come all this way to find nothing more than a dead end. Upon little inspection, however, I realize that a space has opened up above my head. I squirm around. And for the first time in hours and hours, I'm able to change positions
and sit upright. My back cracks, and a rush of unbelievable relief in muscle tension flows through me. I bring up my hands to feel around me in the darkness, and I almost shout for joy. The pipe has reached its end. It's going up now, vertically, up through the sea towards the surface. We came north, I laugh, the cracks of hope widening, flowing into me like rivers of silver. We've been traveling north the whole time. The end of the pipe, upwards to the installation at Azraquan, and to salvation. Unless. I take stock and consider the choice that now faces me. If I'm going to push onwards, then this really is it. It's a coin flip for life or death. There's not much air left in the tank, and if I climb this pipe to discover the worst, if the pipe has been stoppered or plugged, then definitively for me, there will be no way out. I really will reach a dead end. All hope will be lost, and I will drown down here, with nowhere to go, no way forwards and no way back. I shake my head. There's no choice here, not really. It's just willpower. I don't have enough air in my tank to get back to Ahmed, even if I wanted to. It's only forwards, forwards and upwards. All right, I murmur, bubbles spilling. Here we go. And I begin my slow, deliberate ascent. Back pressed against the pipe behind me. Knees and calves against the pipe in front. Up I go, kicking at times, half swimming, half shimmying up the pipe to the surface. Slowly but surely, grimacing through the strain and the pain. And still, so dark, so unbelievably dark. The lack of light does not fill me with confidence. If the pipe was not stoppered, surely I'll be able to see some light, right? I open my eyes in the water. The salt and oil stings like hell, but I need to see, or to try and see, at least. But there's nothing. There's no hint of light at all. Don't lose faith, I tell myself, screwing my eyes shut again. Keep going, keep going. This vertical section of pipe is unlike the one we were stuck down. This part here goes all the way up to the surface, up to the bustle and the relative commotion of Azraquan. Except it won't be bustling right now, of course. I hesitate, taking a deep, strained breath through the mouthpiece, grunting with the strain. Thinking about it, the place could be entirely deserted. I don't even know what time it is. I've been crawling through the pipe for hours upon hours. I'm not sure of the exact time, but I'm exhausted, I'm starving, and my oxygen is about to expire. If I recall correctly, in fact, the site won't even be open tomorrow. I rack my brains and try to remember. When were they all off-site? Was it tomorrow or the day after? Damn, what if everyone's gone back to shore? What if the site is empty? What if there's no one to hear me? What if the pipe is stoppered? What if? I bellow in frustration and continue my ascent. Each breath becomes hard work. I'm starting to feel lightheaded, but there's nowhere to go but up. This section of pipe can't be longer than 80 meters or so. So surely, if it was open, I'd see the light, right? Wouldn't I see the light? Please, I whisper as I open my eyes again, squinting through the darkness, terrified that at any second I will hit a barrier or a stop and my journey will come to an abrupt and bitter end. Any second, at any moment, I could strike the ceiling and I'll be trapped. In the very next second, I emerge from the water. I hear the sounds of splashing as my head breaks free of the surface. I'm still in complete darkness, but I've reached the top. Air. I pull off the mouthpiece and suck it all down, refilling my lungs with far greater ease, rubbing and brushing the oily waters from my face and eyes. I made it, I say to no one in particular, my voice echoing around the narrow little space afforded me. Now, I have to come to perhaps the final hurdle. How cruel it would be, I think. How cruel to make it so far, and then to be denied rescue. So close, and yet so far. I squirm and bring up my good arm with my good hand. I reach it above me, feeling through the darkness as the water spills and drips from my elbow. A few inches above my head, I feel the lid of the pipe screwed tight shut. My heart starts pounding again. Come on, please, please. I search desperately for a release mechanism or a valve that will open the pipe from the inside. But alas, just as I suspected, there is no such valve. I bring up my other hand and try to force open the lid. I try to spin it, to shift it. But nothing works. Nothing at all. And there will be no one on the other side. Why would there be? Their shift is over. They'll have left the site by now, crossed back to the shore. I'm stuck. After everything, I'm just as trapped as Amir and as Ahmed. I started pounding desperately on the lid. I bang the pipe as hard as I can. I start to scream. I start shouting, though the sounds will be muffled. From the outside, my shouts for help would just sound like a load of moaning and groaning, potentially even mistaken for the general rumble of the pipe itself. Help! I scream, slamming both fists on the metal with all my remaining force, not caring for the spikes of pain that shoot through my broken wrist. Panic threatens to overtake me. Now, at this final stage of my journey. Help! I cry, slamming the lid, kicking the pipe, making as much noise as I am able before my constitution breaks. Anyone? I roar into the darkness, and with the sound of a great and sudden grinding directly above my head, the lid shifts, and a curved crack of light spills blindingly into the pipe. I gasp with astonishment, the wind taken from my sails, and I slump back down into the water with a splash. My eyes are forced closed, and the world beyond my sealed eyelids is a dazzling orange-red. I don't even know what to say. I'm too afraid to believe what is happening. I sense someone talking to me. Their voice is confused and alarmed. They grab me by the diving suit, by the shoulders, and with some considerable degree of effort, they haul me out and onto the platform that surrounded the pipe's exit. I'm unable to help myself from weeping. I still cannot see, but the tears streak the salt and the oil from my face. I've never felt so free. I turn and wince and stretch my arms and legs in ways that they were unable for what felt like ages. I feel a hand squeeze my shoulder. A bottle of cool, refreshing, and above all, clean water is gently poured over my face. Kadar, comes a familiar voice. Kadar, what on earth? He fumbles for words. Care to explain yourself, Kadar? What the hell is this? I finally manage to open my eyes, just a sliver. Gradually, painfully adjusting to the light from the flood lamps all around. And I'm greeted by the sight of the only employee still at his station, long after his shift has come to an end. He stares at me, his scruffy red hair and his beard a mess, his expression almost comical in confusion. A dry chuckle escapes my lips. Hello, Zahir, I mutter. You know, I don't think I've ever been happier to see anyone in my entire life. And this, my friends, is the truth. The hours that followed passed by in a whirlwind. The company and the authorities were alerted immediately, and the helicopters were sent up into the sky, and rescue boats were out in the water within the hour. The ruined habitat site was investigated and safely secured. Vast teams of divers were sent down, and they traversed the entire length of the pipe, way into the night, knocking and tapping on the metal, and hunting diligently for Amir and Ahmed. Knocking and tapping on the metal, and hunting diligently for Amir and Ahmed. There was, tragically, no response. I remember pacing up and down in one of the control rooms, fielding calls from family in the presence of several officers and officials as the pressure in the pipe was carefully leveled, as it was disconnected at the safest point and open for inspection. I remember the way I reacted when I was told the news the next morning. After a long and sleepless night, arm bandaged. I remember the breath escaping me. I remember collapsing into the nearest chair. "That's impossible," I murmured. "There's no way." But the bodies of Amir and Ahmed were discovered together, about 10 or so meters north from where we were suckered down. It was ruled that the two men died on impact with the pipe, almost instantaneously. It's likely they weren't even aware of what happened. Their last conscious moments, I'm told, most probably took place in the habitat itself, before the disaster. To this, I say nothing. I simply look out of the window as the morning sun reflects and glimmers, sparkling in the gentle waves of the sea far below.